From Jefferson Public Radio, I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another JPR Live session. JPR Live sessions are recorded with Audix microphones. Audix, when sound matters. My guest today really needs no introduction. His latest release is called Texas, and we're thrilled to have him, Mr. Rodney Crowell. Hello.
Hello, Eric. How are you?
I am wonderful. It is great to meet you. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you. And you've met my traveling companion, Joe Robinson, who's here in the studio with me.
Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Hey, before we get started, I need to pass on the regards of John Paul White.
John Paul, was he just here?
He was just here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Now there's a sweet boy.
You guys worked together on at least one song from the new record, right? It ain't over yet.
Yeah, on a record called Close Ties. We have big plans for more things, but we've got to get in the same room together to do it.
Do you still have a list of big plans? Things that you still want to accomplish in music?
Oh, I do.
Really?
Indeed I do.
What's the one? What is the white whale that you've just never gotten around to?
Well, the project is already in motion. I've written probably the thing that's on my heart and in my heart is climate change and the world we're living in I'm a baby boomer and we haven't done such a good job as caretakers of this planet. And I have work to do, you know, in my own small way. I have no visions of grandiosity like that I'm going to save the world. But I really have to do work where at the end of the day, I can say, you know, I've done my part. So I'm soon going to record an album, and it's entirely focused on the mother principle of this earth and the spiritual aspect of being a citizen upon it.
Mm. I mean, obviously you're driven to do that. You're driven to work on that kind of a project. Do you feel as an artist a responsibility to use the voice that you've created to make those kinds of statements? Not all artists do.
Well, I don't nominate myself or visualize myself as being anything other than what I am, which is basically a middle-class artist. And so, like I said, I'm not deluded to think that I'm going to create this great work of art that's going to, you know, be a paradigm shift in consciousness and on this globe. But I have to live with myself. Hmm. And, you know, I was gifted with an ability to write songs, and I've over the years I've become increasingly better singer and player. So, you know, having been gifted with that, I have some kind of responsibility to use it in the most redeeming way that I can. And that, you know, I've had this career that's, I don't have anything to prove anymore to myself. And so now it's about, you know, I'm entering the last third of my life, too. I've been on this planet a while. So now it's time to do the things that are outside of oneself. Yeah. And that's where I am.
We were talking just before we went on the air today that one of your recent trips actually took you through Northern California, through mm-hmm. where the Paradise Fire was.
Yeah, it's like a pass through. I mean, you know, driving from Petaluma to Grass Valley up through Chico, past Paradise, and coming up Redding on my way up here. We spent the night last night in a beautiful old hotel in Ashland. And it's all there. And, you know, my friends down in Southern California are dealing with it. You know, it's so prevalent and in their faces in the form of fire. You know, down on the Gulf Coast of Texas where I grew up, in Houston, you know, it's water. You know, the water is encroaching. It's coming out of the heavens. It's coming up, you know, from the Gulf. And where I live now in Nashville, you know, 25 years ago, the tornado siren was something we just didn't experience. And now, you know, it's not even seasonal in the springtime. It's tornado season around the clock.
Yeah.
And that, you know, those who deny climate change, I say you just haven't been paying attention to Mother Nature, what's going on. It's so obvious to me.
Yeah.
And
Joe, you were saying you have some family property in Australia that's on fire right now.
Yeah. My home state of New South Wales has 82 fires burning at the moment.
Wow.
And today is going to be in the high 90s Fahrenheit with a lot of wind. So it's the highest danger level, catastrophic fire warnings for all the Sydney area. But I grew up on 100 acres. I'm waiting to see if our house gets taken.
Aye.
A lot of friends' houses have gone this week.
Wow.
So it's pretty full on.
Yeah, it is a terrible time at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would love to turn the conversation into something that is a little more lighthearted than watching our world burn. And
well, we will do that, but first I'm going to perform a song that I wrote this song, 18 years ago or something like that. And it was my first, expressing, my dismay at what was happening in my world. And we'll move on to something more lighthearted, I promise you, but I'm going to start here. To make the world a better place, like dreamers often will, we left our bed of roses to push that rock uphill. The way we went about our tasks proved destined for to fail. Who we thought we were, don't ask. There's no way you can tell. It's a different world now, to say the least. The sun comes up from in the west and sets down in the east. The stars are out there shining, but just where we cannot say. It's a different world now, like night and day. In the name of self-defense, we built bombs to prove a point, and we dropped them on our neighbors when their nose got out of joint. To sell the same hamburger, rainforests had to go. Hell, we don't need no air to breathe, just don't tell us no. It's a different world now, without a doubt. The raindrops fall to heaven and the tides go rolling out. The rivers flow like powdered milk and the wind blows with a wheeze. It's a different world now, there are no trees. I take a look around and I see ice caps in your eyes. Desert where the swamp should be and coal black canvas skies. I take a look around and I see crossbones on the roads, and how we let this come to be seems no one really knows. In life's rich beauty pageant, we put children on a stage and said, flash yourself white belly child, but just don't act your age. Sell sex like cotton candy to young and old alike. And when you've outlived the fantasy, girl, you can take a hike. It's a different world now, but what to do? We had our 15 minutes and we blew it right on cue. We used up Mother Nature like a $20 whore. It's a different world now, there ain't no more. Mm-hmm. called It's a Different World.
That is beautiful.
Thank you.
I bet it's taken on a heck of a lot of different meanings since when you first wrote it.
Well, it certainly seems time is running out on it. You know, when I first wrote it, it was like, well, I need to get this out there because it feels like this is where we're headed.
Yeah.
Now we're there. So, yeah, I'm glad I wrote it.
Yeah, I am too. I don't know that there's any way in a conversation that lasts 10 minutes, 15 minutes, that we would ever encapsulate all that you have accomplished in your musical career. You were, for folks who are not all that familiar, you were featured in the new country music documentary that Ken Burns just put together with both a segment, but also some on-air, some screen time, actually talking about some of your fellow collaborators in the music. What was that process like for you? And was it an honor to be picked to be one of the on-screen folks?
Yes, it was. Luckily for me, Dayton Duncan was a friend of a fan slash friend of mine. We became friends. So, you know, of course, you know, the Ken Burns brand of documentary filmmaking, I was a big fan, you know, Vietnam, baseball, the Dust Bowl, you know, the Roosevelts, you know, I've watched probably all of the Ken Burns documentary. So, of course, you know, when the call came through, yeah, I'm there. I haven't seen it. You know, I have not seen the documentary yet.
Really?
No, I actually have, you know, seven DVDs, but I haven't had a chance to look at them yet. But I've gotten texts, phone calls. I've been stopped on the streets of New York City now by people who have seen it and, you know, they want to talk, you know. So that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have seen it. And apparently, you know, we now take our store on the road with us, you know, in the merch table at the gigs and stuff, you know, and the people that are showing up and buying tickets now because they've seen that documentary. So I think I was just lucky to be included.
Yeah. Maybe you've got a new generation of folks interested in your stuff now.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
You have had songs recorded by a who's who of the music world. Is there one that has become your favorite?
My favorite recording by another. Now,
or favorite song or favorite recording, because I would think of those as different things, potentially.
Well, you know, this may be about the things that you can have. There is a version. A long time ago, Willie Nelson did a song of mine called Till I Gain Control Again, and I went down to the studio in the country in Bogalusa, Louisiana, and recorded it with him. And it was a gorgeous, gorgeous performance and recording. And I said, well, that's going to define it. But he did a live album, and he did the song live, and that's what came out. So that particular version that I so cherish that I've since lost my copy of, looms in my imagination. Now, the same thing is true of a recording of Roger Daltrey on his own doing a song of mine called Ashes by Now, which was never released, but I had a cassette copy when my children were young, and I would play it in our little den there, and when he would sing that chorus, my kids would scream. And I said, wow, this is a hit. And then it never came out. So I had a conversation with somebody this morning who is on the trail trying to find that version just so I can have it, you know, because it gotten away. So out of sight, out of mind, but still in your heart. Those are my two favorite recordings.
Interesting that neither of them have been commercially released.
No, that would tell you a lot about me.
Yeah. You said something really interesting about songwriting that I want to find. This was now going back 15, 20 years, but you were talking in an interview about coming to terms with the fact that the quote-unquote hit-making era of your career was over. And it was kind of coinciding with the rise and the advent of, or the invent rather, the invention of Americana as a genre. And that felt like there was maybe a second life there for you and what you do and the music you create.
Well, that's true. I would say, you know, I've had a couple of hits since that.
Well, sure.
You
know, we know them well.
That I didn't see coming. But it was more of a mindset, which is, you know, for a long time, my instinct was broad stroke, you know, till I gained control again or after all this time. I had an instinct for the broad stroke commercial love song and some kind of country rock and roll kind of thing that I had an instinct for. But as time went on, I began to realize that my sensibilities were becoming more singular. And back there in the end of the 20th century, I started writing a memoir. And I spent 10 years staring at the page. And when writing narrative into a book, man, your sensibilities become truly singular. And I think I was forever changed by that. And now my work is, and it has been for the last 18 years, very singular. You know, the broad stroke love song is not going to come from me as instinctively as it would when I was 28 years old. Mm. But as it happened, Americana music was finding itself and becoming a genre. And it adopted me, and I adopted it in its infancy. And I've been well decorated in that, well rewarded for being a part of that. Yeah. And the audience for that particular kind of music is not necessarily driven by the hit song.
Sure.
It's driven by the artist and the artist's narrative.
Yeah. I found it really interesting that you talked about back in the 70s joining Emmylou Harris's band, that you were not that confident in your own musical ability and not that much a fan of your singing voice.
Not at all.
When did the shift happen? When did you turn the corner on both of those things?
1999 is when I discovered my voice. And you know, I'd made hit solo records, you know, 10 or 12 years before that. Now, it should be said that I developed as a songwriter at an early age. I was writing songs that are still around today when I was 22. So I had that gift, and I had confidence in that, and I was able to write. But to play and to perform, that took a while. And I'm glad. I'm really glad, because right now, you know, I'm traveling with Eamon McLaughlin and Joe Robinson, two brilliantly gifted musicians and singers and songwriters in their own right. And I feel totally confident that I can hold the center stage with that level of talent around me. So it was a slow dawning, but I'm glad it happened, you know, because I'm having more fun now than I did when I was a younger, more insecure human being.
Yeah. Is some of that fun due to the fact that there are no specific requirements of what you need to do or what your output needs to be at this point? You can pick and choose things that you're driven to do because they're enjoyable?
Yeah, and oddly enough, I've become more productive in that mindset.
Yeah.
Can we turn the microphone over to my... I'd love for your audience who may not know about Joe to... And we promised something uplifting. And Joe, if you'll take a cue from me. Joe is recently engaged to a beautiful woman. And I was wondering if you would play that beautiful song you've been playing on stage.
How long have you guys been touring together?
3 years.
Wow.
Thereabouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I look forward to hearing it. What is this one called?
This song's called Do You Want It to Be Me? We should take it slow, 'cause I know only fools rush in. And I've been here before, and I can tell that you haven't been. I see it in your eyes, girl, and there's no denying I can feel the heat. There's only one first love. Do you want it to be me?
There's only one first kiss, one first dance, one first time you get to take this chance. And the heart's first choice ain't always what it should be. There's only one first love. Do you want it to be me? There's only one first kiss, one first dance, one first time you get to take this chance. And the heart's first choice ain't always what it should be. There's only one first love. Do you want it to be?
That is Joe Robinson playing live here in the JPR studios. He's here with Rodney Crowell, whose latest release is called Texas. Well, before I let you go, I do want to talk about this record a little bit. And primarily, I want to talk about Texas, the sound of Texas. Is
right.
that something that you can describe in words, or can it really only be described in music?
Well, Texas, you know, historically, Texas was a country. Sam, you actually, I'll try to tell this quickly, a little history. Sam Houston was the governor of Tennessee, and he had a young bride, and she carried on a public affair, and it got Sam Houston fired as governor of Tennessee. And at the time, Andrew Jackson was the president of the United States, a Tennessean, and he was Sam Houston's friend. So Sam Houston goes off to Washington, D.C., to complain to his friend about getting fired, and his fired said, "Ah, man, don't worry about it. You don't need that gig. I got a better gig for you. I want you to go down to the Texas territories, and I want you to drum up some people down there, and I want you to start a revolution. I'll pay you well for it, and don't worry. Whatever happens, I'll stand behind you." And so he goes down. Sam Houston goes down and finds Jim Bowie and finds all these reprobates, and you know they. Basically steal the Texas territory away from Mexico, or Mexico just kind of said, "Ah, you guys, it's too much trouble for us to deal with you rounders." So, and it was a country first, and Sam Houston was the president. Then it became a state, and he became the governor. So there's always in the back of the Texans' mindset, and in the marrow of it all, is that we were once a country, and we may still reserve the right to go back to that. So that individualism is part of the poetry. I've been often asked about the singer-songwriter, the Guy Clarks, mm-hmm. the Jerry Jeff Walker, mm-hmm. the Billy Joe Shaver, Townes Van Zandt, Steve Earle, myself. These Texas-specific songwriters. I like to think that we're all regional sensibility, but on a global level is what I like to say. But they say, why these tech? Why? And I said, because we're all born liars. And, you know, born liars make really good songwriters.
They have the best stories.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, a lie well told and stuck to will trump the truth.
Yeah.
No pun meant.
So do you think that's where it lies, where the characteristics are, is in the lyrics, or is there a sound of music that comes from Texas that is unmatched elsewhere?
It is a sound, and the sound is this also, you know, post-World War II, the honky-tonk, that was, you know, things were so dire during World War II, and then after World War II, the honky-tonks opened up, Hank Williams' music became so big, as Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. So the culture there, when the celebration started to happen, people were drinking beer and dancing. Sort of the way it was the swing in the 30s, you know, and across the country. So it was a form of celebration, and that sound of live music played the way it was for people to dance to was very much in the sound of the music. But along come, you know, this next genre of songwriters that Willie Nelson was one of the founders of. It became, songwriters started to be able to articulate in language a bit of that independent spirit that is at the base of what Texas is. Whether, you know, it's like politically I'm not lined up with what Texas represents on, you know, in terms of what goes on at the border, that kind of thing. But in terms of the spirit of taking music in as a part of your life and as a celebration, as a meditation, as the soundtrack for how you're living, that's very prevalent in Texas. Mm. And as it is in, you know, in Northern California up through here, there's a particular, you know, I resonate, whatever it is I have to say resonates very well from middle California up to Seattle.
You can retire here if you want. Yeah. We'll have you.
Well, I could, you know, I would. But, you know, I have four daughters and grandchildren back in Tennessee that wouldn't let me out of their sight.
What was the, I mean, you have tons of songs. What was the characteristic behind the songs that you chose to put on this record called Texas? Why these?
Narrative. And all, for instance, you know, I have a song, Billy Gibbons, ZZ Top. He and I had spoken off and on about, wouldn't it, you know, we grew up in Houston on separate sides of town around the same time, and we experienced the regional aspect of music down there, and we've discussed it, and we kind of were looking for something to do just to celebrate our heritage kind of together. And I finally came up with a song that where I could call Billy and say, hey man, I think I've captured something that would, you know, be right there in that feel that, you know, that you're so defined for, and I think I've got a song, and it is a real Texas narrative, and that's how we were able to do that. It just kind of fell together, and I think since I've said that, I guess I should play the song.
That would be fantastic.
And this is a song that I wrote after looking at a photograph of my father-in-law, who was behind the wheel of a 1956 Plymouth Fury, and a hand-drawn picture of my mother-in-law with a big beehive hairdo. I mean, she's looking like a trillion bucks. It must have been 1962. Spit curled down his forehead, talking about how, yes, it's understood. It's not just some lame six bank grease stain sitting underneath the hood. Tamping down a camel on a zipper with a grin, maybe wider than a country mile. Of course it's kind of cool, and it's taking it to school, man, and burning up the road in style. 56 Fury, built for comfort, built for speed. 56 Fury, long about every last thing you need. It's a 56 Fury. Hair stacked up and twisted like some beehive made in France.
Seven double shots of spray net, down for nothing left to chance. Yes, sir, here's what's real, cried sweet Lucille. There ain't no other boy I know who can even dare to hold a candle to that living hot rod Romeo. 56 Fury, high performance, built for fun. 56 Fury, hey Lord have mercy, watch you look at her run. 56 Fury, yeah, yeah, yeah. Two-door hardtop coupe, so sleek and sexy, make a grown man moan. Jet white streak of lightning, destination long since gone. Back off V8 Ford, back off Chevrolet. Your Pontiac and Cadillac ain't even fit for hauling hay. 56 Fury, bound for glory, seconds flat. 56 Fury, somebody tell me maybe what was that? That was a 56 Fury, finest car on the road.
That is 56 Fury, played live in the studio today by Rodney Crowell, who's my guest, along with Joe Robinson. That one comes from the record called Texas, just out. I swear I could talk to you all day. I'm so thrilled you're here. Thank you for introducing us to Joe Robinson.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my jobs in the world right now.
It's a good job that
the
you've
world
done.
The world needs to know about Joe Robinson.
Thank you so much for coming by.
Okay. Thank you.
JPR Live Sessions are supported by and recorded with Audix Microphones. Located in Wilsonville, Oregon, Audix designs, engineers, and manufactures high-performing, innovative products that contribute to the advancement of the professional audio industry.